This is the January 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Jerry Goodell of Midland Research, and Joe Vaklovic from StandardGrain.com. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to our program, including Commodity Week, the Closing Market Report, and other ag programs at willag.org, willag.org. And we have a brand new podcast page there as well, with some great ways for you to listen to our programs using a new provider called Transistor. And they have managed to get our podcast into just about everything. So if you want to listen to us on Apple or Google or Spotify, Amazon Music, even inside of Audible, if you happen to be a book listener, you can find the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Check it out at willag.org under the podcast link. Let's start now by having a discussion about the marketplace. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. I'll begin with you today. Tell me about the cash grain situation on the ground in your part of the world there in Shelby County, not very far, actually, from Archer Daniels Midland in Decatur.
Well, you know, a couple of different things that you see is that this time of year, typically you don't have what I would call, strong basis levels. It's just not something that's normal. And so right now, actually, what we're seeing, though, I mean, even locally, we're running like a 10 under basis, whereas, up at the ABM Decatur is running more like a 12 over basis. And so, you're looking at $6 cash bids. Obviously, at Decatur, you're looking at pushing $6 cash bids at the local level, which considering, the national yield of 177 being a record, we'll find out next week if it is. But regardless, with that being said, it's pretty interesting to see basis this strong. I mean, other parts of the country, different people I've talked to, not so far away from here, we've heard anything from 40, 50 over all the way to a dollar over in Kansas. So, there's just some awfully interesting cash bids going on out there, especially first week of January.
Some of this is logistics, I think, Jerry Goodell, based on whether an end user, for instance, an ethanol production facility that may or may not have storage and may or may not have purchased enough ahead of time, that they really need to put some really good bids out locally in order to attract corn, for instance. However, there's also something underneath the marketplace, and I don't know whether it's because farmers have not let go, whether there was just not enough left in the bin at the end of the year, last year, and that has created a shortage of corn, even in a year where we had the second largest corn crop on record. And I'm trying to figure out what that means for those bringing corn into the marketplace or needing to in January and February, and what suggestions you all might have for them. So, Jerry, given all of that background, how do you see the next couple of months?
Well, definitely the basis levels in this year they started out strong, really because of the fact that we came off of high winds from the summertime from there, and then the tremendous ethanol margin situation, in that we've actually seen the really strong October, November type of ethanol usage and things like that. And I agree that I think that some of the ethanol plants just never attracted the kind of corn in front of them on the Januaries and things like that. It's still kind of interesting in the fact that exports are not really into it just yet. I think that's going to happen as we get into the winter, late winter here and on into spring, because of the seasonal increase of corn versus beans. But at the same time, feed usage scenarios, we've got a few less animals around here this fall. So in general, it's an interesting situation. It's going to really make these December stocks numbers quite interesting here. Because the one trick of this whole thing, too, is we definitely have less stocks coming in, but we never had any huge amount of storage on the ground here for a big crop like we have. So there's some things here that make you feel like, are these numbers all putting together?
Joe Vaklevic, how do you see fundamental usage for corn?
Usage is good. I mean, ethanol margins are fantastic, although they have come down. You know, it was only, what, a month ago that ethanol producers in this country were probably able to clear well north of a dollar per gallon, maybe closer to $1.50, depending on the location. And still, you're probably 50, 60 cents a gallon, which is very, very good. My concern, of course, would be that, you know, they're pushing to buy corn. What happens when they've got their needs covered? You know, we only have so much ethanol capacity here in this country, and you would think that through these big basis pushes, they're getting some corn bought, I would imagine. So I have a lot of questions about that, about this basis situation. It just seems too good to be true, like something that can't necessarily last forever. But that being said, I think it's already lasted quite a bit longer than most people would have guessed. The stocks numbers always seem to provide some sort of surprise, and maybe they throw something in the yield or the production from last year. That wouldn't surprise me either, but there's going to be something surprising in that report next week.
Well, let's come back to those grain stocks numbers, and Jerry Goodell, I'll stay with you because I think you have actually done some of the work on this and released it already. This would be as of December 1st. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about what you expect for both corn and soybeans.
Well, I guess the setting the tone initially is to the size of this year's crop. I guess I'm still in the non-believer we've got a record 177 here. I'm not hugely different, though. Basically, I'm anticipating some impact of this late harvest in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan type situation. Take a little off the yields, 50 million, that type of thing along the way. USDA has already got a huge push going on here on ethanol already, so I don't know if that's going to be a biggie. In that we had some very good totals, as just mentioned here, on Akinove type situation on corn usage. I'm kind of basically, when it's all said and done, I kind of feel like in the corn, we might take off 50 million, then we're going to turn around and take 50 million off of feed. I'm a little cautious of the feed demand number here. And that's why I sense that they're 14, well, they're on a seasonal basis. And my Indian carrier stock's about 14, 96 or whatever it is. No, 90 type situation. So, but on the stocks number itself, I think that there's, you know, we've got so-so exports and we've got excellent ethanol. And so I kind of feel like that, my absolute number there on the December corn stocks, and the point anymore, I have to write these things down. From there, I've got 11,600,000,000 is basically my number on that. And so, you know, the number itself is not there. It's just what impact it might indicate to us here on what our ending carryover stock might be.
Yeah, so to go back through that, I think you told me you had a 1.49 billion bushel ending stocks projected for the January report. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, 1.49. Yeah, 1.49. Basically unchanged, which is kind of bizarre, you know, relatively speaking, considering the fact that, you know, this is not, you know, 1.2, but I think there's still a lot of uncertainty here as to how much we've got sales on corn out there. We just don't have the shipments. It's getting people very nervous about not getting the stuff out the door after you sold it to the Chinese and other people. And that, and then it all depends on what's going on in South America. We haven't touched on that thing yet, but that's the boogeyman on the outside here. That's keeping people a little bit cautious about what that ending carryover stock might be in the end.
Does agmarket.net have a working ending stocks for corn in the January report, Matt?
Yeah, we do. You know, we actually estimated that the corn yield would just come down a shade, 176.8. We kept the same acreage. And when it was all said and done, we bumped up for ethanol demand, 50 million bushels for the time being. A lot of that had to do with, running ahead of pace at this point. But, you know, we're going to come in around 1.425. So we're actually going to come down a little bit from those Novandis numbers. But at the same time, I think from the stocks situation, I could see playing around with the numbers a little bit, if you will, whether we come up with a few less stocks and maybe they try to throw a little more yield at us. I don't know that we're going to get too far in totality. I guess I'm kind of with Jerry. I don't think we'll get too far from the current situation. I just don't see it happening. But again, I guess I would agree with Joe as well that there's going to be some sort of a surprise on this report that, it's going to make everyone kind of stop, take a step back and scratch their head. But that's where we're at. So we're a little bit under where he's talking right now.
And Joe, how about you? Where do you stand for corn?
I don't put together any sort of guesses ahead of the reports necessarily. I think that for the stocks, the slow pace of shipments, it's obviously a concern. We're 15% behind last year in terms of corn shipments from September 1st forward. So I have some concern there. Am I going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be super bearish and super bullish? Those sort of projections have never really served me very well. But I don't disagree with like a number for the ending stocks, at least. That's very little changed versus last month.
Well, let's deal with a different number from this. USDA has the season's average cash price for corn at 545. Can you agree with that one? Do you have a number that would be higher or lower than that, Joe?
There's a million variables in regard to price, like what can happen here over the next, I mean, we've got another, 7 months till the end of the marketing year. You could talk about just ending stocks. You could talk about South American weather in regard to what could affect price. And it's a much bigger and deeper conversation into what drives prices. I don't think it's just grain stocks here in the United States. I think there's a million other things going on. You've got the Fed trying to raise interest rates and get away from easy money policies. You've got an acreage battle that is going to be extremely interesting, probably the most interesting I've ever seen, that's going to affect price drastically in the coming months. So I just see so many variables above and beyond anything that USDA is going to tell us next week. I don't have a clue where prices are going to average over the next 7 months. It's an interesting deal.
All right. And Matt, have you been thinking about what that season's average cash price might look like from your perspective?
You know, I guess I'm probably a little more like Joe on this. The thing is this, I guess the way I break it down, whenever we're talking about cash prices is this, you know, if I'm a producer and I'm sitting here looking at the market today, I just got to ask myself, you know, what the market's trying to tell me whenever it comes to cash corn. And one thing about it is that March corn settled today at 603 3/4 and July corn settled at 602 1/2. So, or 602 1/4. So, you know, you've got a small inverse in the market, first of all, and we already covered the fact that basis has been pretty impressive. And so I guess what I would call a fact is that the market does want your corn right now. I mean, it's telling you that based upon obviously the spreads, the basis. And so looking on out farther into the future, there's a ton of unknowns, as Joe suggested. So we don't know how many acres we're going to see. We don't know how South American weather is going to turn out. And so you can presume that due to the fact that corn is really strong demand right now and things are going well, you know, that's going to carry throughout the marketing year. But those are assumptions. And so at this stage of the game, a producer needs to understand what the risk is to going on assumptions versus facts.
Well, so if the market wants the producer's corn right now, it is the time to deliver it, should they?
Well, that all depends on what they've done to date, you know. So let's say that they've only got 30% or 25% of the corn, and it's all in their bin at home. I kind of like sitting on some corn. I think it's going to be good property. I do think that the end users are going to have to come get it. That's probably a little bit different than maybe if I have it in the elevator, for instance. And so a lot of it has to do with where they're at. You know, if you're holding on to 50, 60% of your crop from 2021, that's worked really good so far. But boy, snubbing your nose at $6 corn hasn't always really worked out so well. So we got to be careful as to tempt fate too much.
On the flip side, we'll turn our attention to soybeans, Jerry Goodell. We'll start with the cash price, which is $12.10 from USDA currently. But tell me about the grain stocks figures for it and what you have at ending stocks for the January report. USDA in its December number, of course, was 340 million bushels.
Well, I think the quarterly stocks on beans are the biggest thing is we're going to have a bigger crop to begin with. The stocks to begin with that were less, but we had a bigger crop. So that's kind of compensating for everything from there. You know, another super kind of situation here on crush the last 2 months. We had a record one back in October. November's just missed having a record on it. Just announced here recently. Overall, the number of bushels seems to be about 7 or 8 million less than last year, I think, on the quarterly situation, on total there. The one thing on exports, and really good old Hurricane Ida really took the snub to us here on getting stuff out in September from there. And so the overall number is going to be down on exports to over 200 million year over year. So I'm coming up with a quarterly number there, just over 3 billion, 60 million in that. And I'm also looking for just a minor reduction, 0.2 of a bushel on beans, same kind of issues of the Eastern Corn Belt type situation on some yields out that way, being the reason why that there's, I got a little less bushels to begin with. From there, interestingly enough, in the past, just having a number over a year ago was something somewhat of a negative, if you will, about stocks on the 1st of December. But in that, considering that things have started to make some significant changes in mindset of South America and what's going on down there, I don't know that that's going to be all that negative. I guess I'm actually within the attitude that smaller crop size. And I also think that the strength of soybean meal basis and soybean meal crush is going to prompt the USDA to actually took another 15 million or so up on their crush number. So you put together that, I'm actually one of the smallest people out there for carryover stock here, just over 300 million for the trade average estimate. Now, at this point, you know, it's not the 120 we had last spring, early summer, but it's still a pretty small number when you start looking at past history. So that's going to be the interesting one. But I think in general, the soybean numbers are really going to be so focused on what's going on in Brazil and Argentina and the weather down there that the stocks and production numbers in the U.S. are kind of on the back burner here.
And on that discussion, Joe, crush in the United States domestically was on a record pace last fall. Do you see very many changes coming in the January report?
Well, what I'm hoping is that my thought in general is that the export program is going to have some problems. Your demand base for soybeans grown in the United States is twofold. It's typically about half exports. It's about half domestic crush. And maybe some of this perceived weakness in the exports, maybe that's going to be changed because of the South American weather situation. That's a moving target. We don't know what that Brazilian crop's going to be. We don't know what the Argentina crop's going to be. But to this point, our sales and our shipments of soybeans are soft. Crush margins have been great, and I think processors here in this country should continue to crush beans at a very, very strong pace. You've got some longer-term issues that should help that as well, this push toward biodiesel and renewables, and maybe that's not something that affects the markets right here and right now. Long-term, that's a good thing. So I guess my general thought is that the crush is going to be good, and I think the exports are more of a question mark. If you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said absolutely the export number has to come down, but now with the South American weather issues and the unknown, there's a chance that this Brazil thing turns into a real mess, and that's not necessarily where I'm leaning, but there's a chance that that happens. And that maybe you get some more export business out of the U.S. than what we thought a month ago.
Matt Bennett, Brazil and Argentina, just Brazil alone is one massive country, north to south, east to west, both. You go with the entire continent, there's just an awful lot of soybean acres, corn acres there as well. And we are in that time frame now where generally we shift from exporting soybeans in the United States or out of the United States to exporting corn, and Brazil and Argentina both pick up that export marketplace. How do you see that transitioning happening at this point? And is the United States lagging still from Hurricane Ida?
Well, there's a whole lot to talk about there. First of all, you know, I agree with a lot of what's already been said. I think one thing that we've got to understand whenever it comes to the soybean situation, you know, from a shipment standpoint, we've actually caught up a little bit here lately. I don't know that I'm going to see a whole lot as far as soybeans, supply and demand are concerned, that are going to shift around. Our carryout's 348 for this report. I really don't think you see a whole lot of adjustments. But whenever it comes to, for instance, the corn shipments, yes, we're, you know, typically we ship a ton of beans right up front. Some of the years of late, you know, we've actually saw some of those shipments kind of trickle out throughout the rest of the marketing year. So I'm like, Joe, I'm not so sure that we're going to be done with this soybean program, especially if you continue to see the kind of weather that we've seen in southern Brazil and Argentina. You know, I think that a lot of folks felt like early on, I'm going to say 3 weeks ago, you know, that, well, maybe the southern Brazil issues, the dryness issues could be somewhat negated by northern Brazil, which there's a pretty large swath in northern Brazil that's had just been inundated with too much rain. And so I've been saying it's kind of similar to what we've seen between the eastern and western corn belt in the U.S. Of course, we're not in the growing season right now, but it's extremely dry in the western corn belt. And in the eastern corn belt, you've got saturation in a lot of areas. And that's what you're seeing in Brazil, is that, you know, there's kind of a line there where it's a whole lot of moisture to the north and not much moisture to the south. And so, you know, I think that it's preliminary to think that that's going to be an awfully big crop. One large house here in the U.S. said 11 million ton drop, and then one in South America came out today with 11 million ton drop to 134. And so, you know, I'll tell you what, those are big chunks. I don't think the USDA takes anything like that. I kind of agree with Jerry. They're going to probably stair step into it and want to learn a whole lot more about this crop before they get too aggressive. But by all means, there's a pretty serious situation going on from a weather standpoint. So I think whenever you're looking at soybeans, while I want to stay flexible, you got to also remember we're already sitting here pretty close to $14.
What do you think about Safrinha corn, which has yet to be put in the ground, and the impact current weather might have on it?
Well, you know, if you end up with any sort of issues, obviously, we've talked about La Nina. Again, La Nina has impacted the south a heck of a lot more than it has the north. And, you know, there could be a lot of acres that would be impacted. But at the same time, you know, it's probably a little bit early. My thing is that crop's going to go in the ground, contrary to last year, in much better time window, you know, than what we did a year ago. And so last year just went in the ground excessively late. I think at this stage of the game, you know, you've got some people trimming their corn estimate due to this first crop by maybe a couple million tons. But it's awful preliminary to start discounting that Safrinha crop. But by all means, I think a person should be hesitant to just make the assumption, given the weather abnormalities that we've seen already this year, you know, that Safrinha crop's going to be able to get started, go through the whole growing season without any major challenges.
And Jerry Goodell, the Safrinha crop in South America is how important to the global corn supply?
It's a huge chunk of it, to say the least. The lack of supply last year made the world's biggest importer decide to buy two big chunks of old crop and new crop from the U.S. So we didn't have that purchase. Our export sales at 2.5 would be, that'd be second largest anyway, and on top of the whole thing. It's a huge impact out there. And exactly right, the making a huge assumption about the output down there in Brazil right now because the fact that so much of it is in the second crop, and the logic that potentially there's going to be more people be willing to go ahead and put second crop corn in there because of the general prices we have right now around the world. Biggest thing is that they're going to, lots of people have, you know, big concern in the U.S. is about inputs and fertilizer availability and chemicals and things like that. For most people down there, they went ahead and got control of their inputs. Maybe it was more expensive than they wanted, but they have control of them. So for what they've already planned, will they have enough to go and make additions to it? Same situation here in the U.S. is being maybe the corn price will be so attractive that we need to have more corn acres than even last year as we get to spring if something goes wrong down there. But the biggest problem is that our supply chain issues are not going to be able to be as flexible as they've been in the past to be able to switch around. So those are some big decisions that's going on. I totally agree that that the corn number at this point could see a slight decline, but it's involving the impact of the South and that southern areas of Brazil. Now, Argentina is we're just getting into the part of their situation down there and the impact of this weather. So there could be a swing factor in there of, you know, production into the world markets, both in corn and soybeans, and that. And I guess the interesting twist is that they delayed planting their corn in the ahead of harvest on wheat and planned to do it second because that worked out so beautifully last year in Argentina. That's maybe not the case this year by delaying, not putting a higher percentage of the crop that they put in Argentina early, shrank and now put in the second. It could have a bigger impact on weather if it looks like it's building that direction right now.
And Joe, you have anything to add about the crops in Brazil and Argentina?
Just the one thing to note about Brazil is that geographically, the split between the first and the second corn crop is very different. You know, that first corn crop, a lot of it's in the far south that's been drought stricken. And the second corn crop, which is a much bigger corn crop, is a lot more further north. Like Mato Grosso is the biggest producing state in terms of the second corn crop. So there is a big difference there geographically. And the majority of the areas that will be planted in that second corn crop are in good shape. If anything, they're too wet right now. It's not a situation where they're too dry. Some of those southern areas could be too dry by a little bit. But the majority of it's going to be in good shape. The input situation, I totally agree with. I think it's premature to make any drastic assumption at all, though, about that second corn crop.
Now let's get a final word from each of you. Just a reminder that USDA will release the grain stocks and crop production, some wheat figures, on the 12th of next week. That's Thursday, January the 12th. CONAB, which is the USDA counterpart in Brazil, should have an update, I believe, on the 11th. So Wednesday, we'll try to keep you up to date on those during the closing market report. Let's get a final word from each of you now. I'll start with you, Matt Bennett from agmarket.net.
Yeah, there's no doubt that January report could provide some serious volatility. We've seen limit moves multiple times around that report. And I know there will be a lot of angst whenever you're trying to figure out exactly what to do. But, you know, sometimes we can overcomplicate our marketing. I think there's definitely some tools out there that you can at least put a floor under these prices if you're super concerned about it, or just simply take advantage of the really good prices we currently see. So we've got a great situation on our hands. I think that as long as we handle it correctly, we're going to have a pretty darn good start to the 22 year.
Jerry Goodell from Midland Research, your final word?
Well, I totally agree that there's a situation here on the markets at this point when we're talking about $6 values on futures prices and the strong basis together. Even when we had some values last year that were strong in the futures, the basis wasn't as strong as this. So as a long-time indicator of what to do, it's always sometimes better to go ahead and make the sale and then look for an opportunity to come back in for ownership on a pullback or put option ideas into these markets. And that, you know, the idea that, you know, the one thing I think that's really interesting, I think, is if you think about it in the classic sense, last year, like a lot of us felt like that, oh, we sold this stuff too cheap and we're holding on to it and we're going to make up for that last year because we know it's going to be going to the moon like $7 again on beans or on corn, and same thing on beans and that kind of stuff. So I'd be a little more thinking about the idea that Mother Nature probably is not going to end up being as nasty in all areas of the world from the standpoint of the South America's corn crop to the Western Corn Belt of the U.S. As it was this last year. So think about your marketing ideas on a situation and think about the ideas of the absolute values we have out here in both corn and beans and do that.
And Joe Vaklevic from standardgrain.com, your final word.
I'm going to go outside of the box a little bit. I mentioned the Federal Reserve for a second earlier, and I'm going to expand on that. The Fed released the minutes from their December meeting yesterday, and they were extremely hawkish across the board. They're talking getting away from these easy money policies, getting away from quantitative easing, interest rate hikes, unwinding their balance sheet. The stock market did not like that yesterday. The last time that the Fed tried to do this was in 2018. And when that happened, the S&P lost 20%. Jerome Powell, the chair of the Fed, famously pivoted and very quickly went the other direction. He said, nope, we're going to go back to these easy money policies. If this time around they decide that they're going to stick to their guns and they're going to go more hawkish, they're going to get away from easy money, they're going to go to higher rates, and that were to cause some sort of drastic correction in the stock market, funds are long 370,000 contracts of corn. These grain markets will not be immune to a 20-30% correction in the stock market if that were to happen. That's not what I'm predicting, but I'll tell you, the stock market and the outside markets, they are not going to like these hawkish Fed moves if they come to fruition. It's just an additional risk. It's one of a million risks in this sort of environment.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program on our website at willag.org. Look under podcasts and you'll find the archive there as well. We'd like to thank our panelists today, including Matt Bennett from agmarket.net, Jerry Goodell from Midland Research, and Joe Vaklovic of standardgrain.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.